Hi there, my name is Njerim Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequence KE, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Before we get into today's episode, I do want to say that this episode was supposed to come out, or this episode was recorded about 2 weeks ago, and then just last week things completely refused to work out, like where I usually upload my audio so that it can get published and distributed. Site was not working. I got this brand partnership to work with a certain software where it's a really good software actually, but then the software was also not working, so that every time I would record the episode on the software, try to edit it and then try to download it so I could take it to this other site for distribution, nothing was working. And so yeah, so those no episode last week. Now this week we're going to listen to the Valentine's episode. Okay, bye. Well, no, bye. Listen, start listening now. Okay, our place today are Musa Larot, the victim, and Samson Kiprono Samoei, our accused person. And this story takes place on the 1st of April 2018, somewhere referred to as Tarakonin Village, Kiplombe location, within Baringo County. All right, let's get into the story. So April 1st of 2018 was a Sunday, and it was around 9 a.m. Musa Larot was with his wife, who was identified as Emily Kemoi Larot, and their children. So they were all, well, kwa shamba, they were in the garden planting. So they plant throughout the whole morning until about 1 p.m. when they decided to stop and go have lunch at home. Court documents only identified one of the children, and his name was Brian Kiptoo Larot, and at the time of this incident he was only 8 years old. And I was wondering if maybe the court documents identified him because he's the only one who maybe witnessed the actual crime, but I'm not sure. He's the only child that was identified. So they decide to go home for lunch, and as they're having lunch, as they're getting ready to finish up and go back to the garden, to the shamba, a neighbor approaches them, and the neighbor was identified as Samson Kiprono, who is our accused person. And Samson lived only about 400 meters away from where Musa and his family lived. So anyway, Samson comes over and he asks Emily whether she has sambusa. So Emily was a busa seller. So he asks Emily whether she has sambusa, and Emily says that she's brewing some and it's going to be ready by 4 p.m. So he can come back at 4 p.m. and he's going to get sambusa. So the family goes back to the garden, they go, they plant their things. And then at 4 p.m., Emily comes back to the house and she's getting the busa ready. And then after a short while, Musa joins her and the two of them start drinking together. And then some time after that, we're not really told how much time passed, but sometime after that, Samson also joins them. He asks for a cup of busa, which Emily was selling at 50 bob, 50 shillings, and he paid for it with a 100 shillings note. So after he pays for this, the busa with the 100 bob, he begins to demand for change from Musa. And Musa tells him that I don't have change for you right now. I'll get you some change. Hold on, I'm going to go get you some change. And court documents again really didn't say why or how, but somehow this conversation becomes an argument. And Samson is really impatient. And I'm guessing it's maybe as they continue to drink, as they progress drinking, Samson is becoming more and more impatient. He wants his money. Musa doesn't have the money. You know, Samson is like, go get it. Musa is like, just be patient, I'm going to give you your money. And so they start arguing, going back and forth. And Samson becomes very, very impatient. And he picks up a stone and he throws it at Musa and hits Musa on the forehead. So Musa falls down and Samson gets up, or just because he was probably already up, he decides to go back to his house. And remember, he didn't live very far away, just 400 meters from where Musa lived with his family. So he hits him with a stone. Musa has fallen down. Samson has gone inside his house. And that should have been the end of this story, right? That should have been as far as it escalated. But let's continue. So again, after a while, Samson comes out. He's like, you know what? No, I want my money. So he comes back out, but this time he comes back with a bow and some arrows, and he's really demanding his money back from Musa. And Musa still does not have the money that Samson is asking for. So as they're again arguing back and forth, because this time I'm sure Musa is also angry, because why did you hit me? So court documents say that Samson was standing about 70 meters away from Musa and they were arguing. And it says that Samson was telling Musa, don't come close to me, you know, like stop coming close to me and just give me money. All I want is my money. And so as they're arguing, Samson aims his bow and arrow and shoots Musa on the right side of the neck. And Musa instantly again falls down and starts. And then again, after Samson does this, he turns around and he goes back to his house. So Emily, who was witnessing all this, she sees that her husband has been shot. He has an arrow on his neck and he's bleeding. And she tries calling for help, but nobody comes to her rescue. And I was trying to imagine, if Samson was a neighbor who only lived about 400 meters away, surely there must have been some other neighbors around, but nobody comes and helps her. And again, remember, this started at around 4 p.m. is when the drinking started. So court documents say that at about 7 p.m. So I am assuming that the drinking together and the arguing and the fighting has happened in that span of 3 hours, but I'm not sure of the exact timelines. So at about 7 p.m., Emily and Musa still have not been helped. So she tells one of her children to go and inform Emily's sister of what has happened. And she's really desperately trying to remove the arrow, but the arrow is stuck to the side of his neck. And at about 9 p.m., the children come back and her sister never shows up. So at about 9 p.m., by this time she's been able to remove the arrow, but he's still bleeding. And we're not certain if he's still outside or he's been moved inside the house, because remember, nobody's coming to help her. So we don't know if he's still right where he was shot or she has moved him inside. But at about 9 p.m., she decides to go to another neighbor. Now, this other neighbor was identified as Laban Kiptoo. And Emily tells Laban everything that has happened. So Laban helps Emily to call the area's assistant chief, who was only identified as Mike Cole. And they call him at about 9 p.m. and he arrives about 2 hours later at 11:40 p.m. So he comes to the house and he finds Emily, Laban, and there's another man who was identified as Victor Soul. So the three of them are in the house. We still don't know where Musa's body is. So the assistant chief, Laban, and Victor, without Emily, they go looking for Samson, because Emily says that it's Samson who shot her husband. And they go look for Samson, and when they didn't find Samson, they decide to go looking for his brother. So about an hour later, at 1 a.m., they find Samson's brother, and Samson's brother was identified as Patrick Samoei. And now the four men, the assistant chief, Laban, Victor, and Patrick, decide to go back to Samson's house, and they find him inside his house and he's asleep. So inside the house, they recover the bow and arrow and they take Samson back to the crime scene. When they take him back to the crime scene, Emily confirms with everybody that yes, this is who I was talking about. This is the person that shot Musa in the neck. And remember, she managed to take out the arrow that was stuck to the side of Musa's neck. So she also gives them that broken arrow, because that's evidence. So Samson is arrested and taken to Esagari AP post, and DCI officers were sent to the crime scene. And now at this point, the court documents really don't say it, but I am assuming that Musa already died, because I'm thinking with all the bleeding that must have been happening and they're not getting any help, I'm assuming that eventually he just died. But the court documents don't really state when he dies. But when the DCI officers are coming, they're coming to collect his body. So at some point he dies, and I still don't know where he is. I don't know if he's still outside or he's been moved inside. So the DCI officers find Musa's body. They take all the evidence, the arrows and everything, and they also recover a stone that had some blood. And the court documents also say they recover a bloody jumper from Samson. So Samson was removed from Esagari AP post and he was taken to Musa was taken to Eldama Raville District Hospital. There, a postmortem was conducted on his body on 11th April 2018. And the pathologist that did the postmortem stated that Musa had died due to injury to vital blood vessels caused by a sharp object causing hemorrhage. And hemorrhage is a loss of blood from a ruptured blood vessel. So they also, as they were conducting the postmortem, they also take blood samples to go compare with all the evidence that they had collected at the scene and see if the blood matches up to the things that they had gotten at the crime scene. So after all this, Samson is arraigned in court and he is charged with murder, contrary to with Section 203 as read with Section 204 of the Penal Code, and initially pleads not guilty to the crime. And so this case takes a long time to prosecute, because remember, it happened in April of 2018. By January of 2023, his trial is still ongoing. So when his case comes up for mention on the 26th of January 2023, he decides to opt for a plea bargain. He doesn't want to go on with the trial, because at this point it's been how many years? 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, about 5 years that he's been sitting in remand. So on the 26th of January, he asks for a plea bargain, and then his plea bargain hearing was set for April 27th, 2023. And then on July 13th, 2023, his plea bargain was executed. Now, this is the first plea bargain case that we're covering, I'm pretty certain, because the other case that was kind of like this but not really was James Koech's case, but him is because the community asked for him to go back home. He didn't do a plea bargain. Yeah, so this is our first plea bargain. So let me educate you if you don't know what a plea bargain is. According to the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions, the aim of a plea bargain or plea negotiations, is that how you say that? Negotiate. So it's negotiations? Huh. Am I forgetting English? All right. So the aim of a plea bargain is for the accused person to enter into an agreement or plead guilty in exchange for some concessions by the prosecution. This may take the form of an offer of a plea by the accused to some but not all the charges, or a different offense or a less serious charge, or to one of multiple charges or agreements to testify against some or other of the accused persons. So basically, if in Samson's case, you were charged with murder, you're like, you go to the prosecution, you and Julia go to the prosecution, you're like, okay, I want to do a plea bargain. So the prosecution comes back and says, fine, we're not going to pursue the murder conviction, I'm going to bring it down to manslaughter, and you're going to plead guilty to the manslaughter, and then you're going to be sentenced to this period of time, and then you can agree or you can disagree to the plea bargain. Or they can tell you that if you come and testify, if you committed a crime, injure multiple people, if you come and testify against the others, we can either take away some of the charges that you've been charged with, or we can reduce the number of years that you have to serve, or something. Just try to basically not, you know, have to go through the whole trial. Okay? All right. So Samson's charge was reduced from murder to manslaughter, which is contrary to Section 202, as read with Section 205 of the Penal Code, and he pleaded guilty to manslaughter. The prosecution asked the court to treat him as a first-time offender, and the court asked for a pre-sentence report, which was filed on October 17, 2023. Now, here's where I feel that things stopped working. Well, things were never really working in Samson's favor, so let me just not even say that. Let's look at the report that was filed by their probation officer. So the report established that Samson was born in 1988, which means that at the time he was killing Musa in 2018, he was 30 years old. He had dropped out of primary school in class 6 due to financial challenges, and he became a herder. So when he turned 26, he transitioned from looking after livestock into farming, which is what he was doing up until the time he was arrested for the murder of Musa. He had also, within that time, he had also been married and divorced twice. So the report also established that Samson expressed remorse for Musa's death and stated that their argument had gotten out of hand, which is why he shot him. And the report also, because the report, one of the things that they had to do is go talk to their families and see if there could be any kind of reconciliation. Could they be able to forgive Samson and accept him back into the community and things like that? So the report established that Musa was actually not even from the area. He had very recently moved there so that he could find casual jobs. And so efforts to reconcile Musa and Samson's family were not successful, because again, Musa's not from there. So it's very hard to get people to travel all the way to come and talk to the people who killed your relative. And also, Musa also had been married twice. He had an ex-wife and then the current wife that he had when he died, and the two wives, the first wife and the second wife, they could not agree on the terms of negotiation. So his first ex-wife, by the time that Musa was dying and all these efforts to negotiate were being had, is that how you say that, they were trying to have all the negotiations, his first ex-wife had already been married by another man, and so she really kind of didn't care. But the son that they had had together, the first ex-wife and Musa, he wanted compensation, monetary compensation, occasion for the death of his father. And then Emily, who had witnessed the death, court documents just say that she had since moved on with her life. Because I can imagine that she didn't want to keep reliving this because her children had probably watched their father die, and she had watched her husband be shot and just die, and nobody's coming to help her. So I'm pretty sure she must have been really traumatized by this, and she just decided to stay away from everything. And when the court, the probation officer, tried to find other relatives of Smutha, as I say, they really could not be able to trace him because he was not native to where he died. So the probation officer concluded that due to these circumstances, the home environment is not conducive for reintegration. Now let's look at something else that is the Samson's lawyer had to present to the court. I think even the prosecution. No, I think it's Samson's lawyer had to present to the court, which is mitigation. So in law, mitigation refers to reducing the severity of a penalty in criminal cases or minimizing the damages or losses in civil cases. It involves presenting factors that make a penalty less severe, and that's criminal mitigation, or taking reasonable steps to avoid accumulating unnecessary losses after a breach of contract. So you're kind of trying to say that, you know, this person did this really bad thing, but like, consider this thing, consider that thing, consider ABC. Or maybe it wasn't as bad as, you know, we may have thought, because consider this thing, consider that. That's how I understand it. So Samson was represented by a lawyer identified as Mr. Moita, who started by stating that Samson was very remorseful for the death of Musa. He asked the court for leniency because his client did not intend on killing Musa. He just got really, really angry, and he did something that he should not have done, which unfortunately led to the death of this other person. So Mr. Moita added that Samson was 35 years old and he had not been married at the time, but he lived with his two brothers and his mother, who was court documents say that she was aged between 50 and 52, so they really didn't know when she was born, but she was between 50 and 52, and that his father had died a while ago. So he asked the court to consider the 5 years that he had already spent in remand when handing him his sentence. So the lawyer also added that Samson had asked Musa's family for forgiveness and they had already forgiven him. He requested for a non-custodial sentence so that Samson can seek family reconciliation under the Tugen culture. He said Samson had learned his lesson and he was ready to change and become an upstanding member of society. However, the state, represented by a lawyer identified as Ms. Ratemo, said that although Samson did not intend to kill Musa, he had used unreasonable force in trying to mitigate the situation. She added that his actions had led Emily and her children to be left without a provider because Samson is the only one who worked to give them to make sure that they could eat and have their basic needs. And so because of all these factors, the prosecution sought for a custodial sentence so that Samson can be rehabilitated because he clearly had some anger management issues. Now let's get to the determination or the judgment. So this case was heard at the High Court in Eldama Ravine before Judge Rachel Ngetich, who stated that under Section 205 of the Penal Code, a person convicted of manslaughter is liable to life imprisonment. I didn't hear this part, but I saw that there was like a thing that the judge had added, that there's a certain case that was tried, and the conclusion from that case was that giving somebody life in prison for manslaughter is kind of taking it too far. I don't remember the exact words that they used. They didn't say taking it over, but that's how I understood it. It's like if you convict somebody of manslaughter and then you sentence them to life, that's kind of doing too much. So anyway, she said, and I quote, "I've considered sentiments by the victim's family, the accused family, and the local administration. I've also considered that the accused is a first-time offender. The accused attacked and shot his opponent with a bow and arrow out of rage and anger. The accused might have felt provoked by the deceased actions, but there were other ways of settling disputes rather than resorting to violent attacks, which resulted in loss of precious life," she said. She added that even though Samson acted out of anger and rage, the use of, why do I do this? I always take a statement from a direct quote and then I kind of repeat it and I notice it as I'm reading. Anyway, so she added that even though Samson acted out of rage and anger, the use of bows and arrows to inflict injury is an aggravating factor. She said, and I quote, I take note that there is no reconciliation so far between the family of the accused and the family of the deceased, and as is confirmed from the pre-sentence report, the ground is still hostile for the accused. In view of the above, I am inclined to impose a custodial sentence. And remember that his lawyer had asked for an uncustodial sentence and said that Musa's family had forgiven Samson. But then the prosecution came in and said, actually, no, he needs to get a custodial sentence so that he can work on his anger management. So a custodial sentence basically means that Samson is going to prison. So on November 15th, 2023, the judge sentenced Samson to 20 years in prison with time served. So that means that he's going to serve about 15 years in prison. So by the time of his ruling, Samson had served 5 years in remand, which leaves 15 years on his sentence, and he'll be likely out of prison in 2038 when he is 50 years old. And that is the story of Musa Lorot. Oh, if you've made it to the end of this episode, thank you for so much for hanging out with me on Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. I decided to drop this episode today because it's officially been a month of me like podcasting again. And if you know me, you know that consistency is not my strong suit. So this was a really big deal for me. And I just felt nice. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do another episode today. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you're having a lovely Valentine's Day. And yeah, come on, I'm talking kupenda, jipende. I'm kujua nipende mimi. And here's how you can show me love. Follow me on all my social media platforms. On Instagram, I'm Crime and Cons KE. On TikTok, I'm Crimes and Cons KE. On Facebook, I'm Crime and Consequence KE. On YouTube, I'm Crime and Consequence KE. And you can find the podcast on Spotify, AfriPods, Apple Podcast, and CastBox. I used to think I'm on 5 platforms. I don't feel like I'm forgetting any. All right, and I will see you guys next Wednesday. Bye.